Welcome into the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're back in action, back in the seat here. Back from Wolseley, Saskatchewan, myself. Jet lag.
Did it change you?
Yes. I love a small town. We got 90 minutes ahead here. Big one on the network on After Us. It'll be Monday Night Hockey, Leafs and Panthers, 7 p.m. puck drop with a big-time playoff vibe tonight. Merrick Monday in a few to go through tonight's playoff implications and more. And he's got a new NHL award that he's proposing. And we're going to, you know, we're going to give our own twist on it as well.
And add a few more. And to break down the Florida-Toronto matchup a bit further, another Jeff, Bally Sports Panthers analyst and NHL father Jeff Chychrun will be on in about a half hour. I know you want to grill him about his son's, well, non-grilling eating habits.
Yeah, lots of liver and stuff. Not into that. We will have to get to the bottom of it, though. Switching over to just Sportsnet 590, The Fan at 7 p.m. ahead of Jays and Astros series opener tonight, Julia Kreutz will join us to break down the series split this past weekend with the Rays and then Bowden Francis on the mound tonight. What to look forward for that.
And you know the drill, best bets. We'll talk a little bit about March Madness in the extra half hour. A massive, massive game tonight on the women's side. We'll do a little Wolseley breakdown. And we're adding a couple more NHL awards. We'll do that at 7 o'clock.
Okay, so as we mentioned, Monday Night Hockey tonight is Leafs and Panthers. I'm going to try to get there after our show. Might miss the first period, but I have an excuse on like some other Leafs fans that aren't there for the first period. I will be in attendance. And Ilya Samsonov's getting the start tonight. He had a great game on Saturday night, Hockey Night in Canada.
He did.
A shutout against the Buffalo Sabres in what was kind of like a home game for the Maple Leafs. So with Ilya Samsonov getting tonight's big matchup against the Florida Panthers, to me it signals that the Leafs are trusting that he might be or he should be the game one starter if the playoffs were to begin.
Yeah, I don't know if today's game and the decision to go with Samsonov means, hey, they're showing their hand tonight. But you can kind of see that, you know, Samsonov has earned something that he didn't have before. I don't know if trust is the thing, but he's earned something and he's taken something back that I guess he gave up. And did he earn everything back that he sort of lost mid-season when it wasn't working for him? He has to do the mental reset. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure. But I think what we're seeing now is the process of Samsonov trying to earn all of that back. And if he just continues to play the way he has, I do think he's going to be the game one starter. Like, this is a fascinating situation because it seemed like, yeah, everybody in the world wants it to be Joseph Woll. And then Ilya Samsonov has just not allowed that to happen. If he keeps playing like this, I think it would be an immense mistake to turn the other way. Why? Because Joseph Woll's the goaltender of the future because you do have more trust in him, even if what you're seeing hasn't been better starts and better performance. Like, I think you could easily galaxy brain this thing. Ilya Samsonov's been spectacular, unbelievable. They're playing for him. As long as he keeps this up, I think it's going to be him night one of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, 15-3-1 with a .916 save percentage in his last 19 games. It's a completely different Ilya Samsonov. It's one of confidence, of structure, of, I guess, even like a little bit of a fun side to him that we lost when he was going through that really difficult December when he got put through waivers and he had his mental reset. Just contrast what we saw last time he played Buffalo. That almost ended his Leafs career in a sense, right? He goes to the Marlies, he doesn't play. And then look what we saw on Saturday night, the shutout, the swearing jokingly after the game. Like, it's just a different energy and it's a different confidence level with Ilya Samsonov. And I think the players will respond really well to that. Not that Joseph Woll, you don't need to compare and contrast, but one person gets to start. One person gets the opportunity. And for me, it feels like the Leafs are rallying around Ilya Samsonov's comeback. His stretch of play that has been almost unbelievable. It's one of the best stories that we've seen in the second half of the NHL. Is Ilya Samsonov finding his own? And tonight against the Florida Panthers, I mean, it's one of only 9 remaining tests and probably the biggest test remaining because the Leafs will close the season with the Panthers and Lightning. But by the time it's April 16th and 17th, you might be load managing. You might not be, or you might be playing for a position as a second or third place team in your division. So tonight, I mean, it sets the tone. If you play the Panthers and you play them one more time, tonight might be the time that you put your best starter, your best foot forward, get that win, and then we'll see how they distribute the next couple games. But this one, I think, means a lot to Samsonov, to the team, and you've got Matthews chasing 60 or 70 at this point, maybe 65. Mm-hmm. There's a couple big things to watch down the stretch. I think Samsonov's confidence level has been the biggest.
This is such a gift, too, because even if, like, confirmation bias was the thing that you were searching for down the stretch, like, let's say you were all in the bandwagon of Joseph Wall. That's all you wanted to see is Joseph Wall take this net over. Like, maybe you'd be disappointed because your confirmation bias isn't happening or it isn't playing out the way that you expected. But these things, big games, Stanley Cup playoff moments, like, they can have a major, major effect. And if you throw Joseph Wall in again, where maybe it's too early, and all of a sudden we're looking in a year and there's just way too, like, there's not that there's skeletons, but there's no track record of success. And you're looking back thinking, well, is it going to happen for Joseph Wall? If Ilya Samsonov just puts himself in that position, it's not a free roll at the table, but it's an opportunity to put a goaltender who you might not be having any sort of relationship with in two, three, maybe even 1 year's time into the net to help him earn his next dollar for your benefit while Joseph Wall can continue to graduate and continue to grow in his role as an NHL goaltender. Maybe he's not quite there yet, and you'll get the best Ilya Samsonov in the playoffs. And then that doesn't change the way you feel about Joseph Wall moving forward. I think this is a great problem for the Leafs to have.
Yeah, and a problem that they probably haven't had too often, right? When you have two goaltenders that you almost feel you could put in as a 1A, 1B in a big moment in a playoff opportunity, I think they're probably happy with the problem at hand. Let's bring in Jeff Merrick. Of course, we have Jeff Merrick showing 32 Thoughts, the podcast ahead of Monday Night Hockey. We got Leafs and Panthers. Jeff, we're talking about this one like it's kind of a playoff preview, a playoff atmosphere. And Samsonov getting the net for us seems to be maybe a tipping of the hand that he might be the Leafs' number one choice. Is that how you're seeing it?
Yeah. I mean, if you're starting the playoffs right now, then yeah, I think Ilya Samsonov's your goaltender. I think we're all wondering, okay, who starts in game number 83 here? And, you know, just listening to your conversation as well, I'm bobbleheading a lot of it. There are a lot of people that are, you know, really want this to be Joseph Wall's net. They want the future now, but I mean, what a great story Samsonov is, right? Like, I mean, waived, not claimed, goes to the Marlies. It's been a humbling season for Samsonov. You know, Elliot and I were talking about this on the radio show this afternoon, and if we had this conversation at Christmas and I blurted out, like, to both of you, you know what? I think Ilya Samsonov's going to play game 83 for them. I don't know that you'd ever have me back. You know, until maybe now, and I'd do my victory lap and say, see, I told you so. But nobody saw this thing coming. I don't know that this is a tipping that this is the way they're leaning right now, other than he's just the goaltender that gives them the best chance to win at this moment. It's a great story. He's playing fantastic. He's got his rest. I say go with him, and clearly Sheldon Keefe feels the same way.
Oh, say, so the goaltending might actually, like, determine whether or not the Maple Leafs have a success in the playoffs or not. But whether it's Wool or Samsonov, I guess it really doesn't matter as long as you're getting good quality goaltending. But if you take goaltending out of the equation, I suppose you could factor Sergei Bobrovsky in this. But let's say they face Florida. And let's say it's a matchup where goaltending doesn't determine who's going to win. Just the Maple Leafs now, as opposed to last year, have they better equipped themselves to deal with the challenge that the Panthers do possess?
First of all, we're assuming, let me rewind here to the goaltending conversation. We're assuming that whoever starts game 83 is going to ride the entire playoffs. And, you know, the reality of net mining right now and playoff hockey is you don't just go with one goaltender anymore. I do think the Leafs are a better equipped team, and that has, you know, nothing to do with, you know, any of the additions, although we know that player like Tyler Bertuzzi is always a different player in the postseason, even though he's only had the one crack at it at the NHL level in the American League. He was MVP when he was playing with Grand Rapids. I mean, that is an environment built for Tyler Bertuzzi. You know, I think that, you know, the maturation of players like Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, to say nothing of William Nylander, and those were the three that we were sort of keying on. Okay, are they able to take the next step in their careers? Listen, Matthews is just laying waste to every net that he stands in front of. And the William Nylander story is well told, and he's always someone that performs in the playoffs anyway. So the Leafs have a little bit of a tougher back end, and that is very much by design, more of a playoff back end than they had before. And, you know, to the previous conversation, I do think as of right now, they do have better goaltending. Tonight's going to be interesting, though. And again, I never want to put sort of too much into one game, but The one thing about the Florida Panthers is they can play any way you want it. They can play a 2-1 nip and tuck game. They can play a wide open 7-5 game. They can play a rough game, as we've seen before. They can play a, you know, let's go skill for skill kind of game. Like, they're one of those teams that kind of, you know, can play any way you want here. I would imagine that if there's going to be any message sending for the postseason, whether it's Tkachuk or whether it's Bennett, and those are usually Exhibit A and B on this team, this thing could get a little bit rough, but probably more so than in however many years we're saying about the Maple Leafs. They're kind of equipped for that now. Like, they're fine, whether it's Max Domi or Tyler Bertuzzi or Benoit back there on the back end. Like, I think that they're fine to play that style of game. We haven't always been able to say that about a Maple Leafs team.
And we saw a little bit of that on Saturday night against the Buffalo Sabres. But what we did see is also Matthews scoring 60th. We saw those guys with the balloons in the stands and the Matthews on their shirts or their stomachs, I guess, was awesome. Now we're already looking at 70. We're trying to do the math. And, of course, it's, you know, not so many games left, but it is Austin Matthews. Do you think 70 is a real possibility? And if he's close, how much they're going to push for that, considering, you know, the playoffs is really the biggest prize you should be winning?
Yeah, I don't know that. I can't see the Maple Leafs saying, you know what, we're going to let you go. We're going to let you play right to game 82 because you're chasing 70. The playoffs is still the big picture here. It will be a, to me, it's still a stretch that he gets to 70. 65, I think, is probably maybe a more realistic number. Like, I think it would be a marvelous story if he does get to 70. But right now, being, you know, one of, you know, only nine other players that have, you know, two 60-goal seasons under their belt, that's kind of a big accomplishment there. So I'm not sure they push him for the 70. I can see him probably resting in game 82, maybe even game 81 as well, much to his chagrin, because I really do feel that Matthews has, now more so than ever, a sense of where he fits in the sort of not just Maple Leafs framework, but the NHL framework, both current and historical as well. And I think he sees the opportunity that's in front of him right now, and mainly. And man, Elliot and I got ripped for even bringing up this conversation on the podcast. But I'll say it, like, it does feel as if the moment that Ovechkin catches Gretzky, we're going to be wondering, okay, when does Matthews then catch Ovechkin? Because that's the rate that he's scoring at.
Yeah.
And maybe just Ovechkin turns into that sort of transition title holder.
Yeah, that's it would be tough to track down that record, and then Austin Matthews is right on your heels. But he will hold it for some time when he gets there, and I do think it's a matter of when now. For Matthews to get 70, you're going to have to score some goals in short order, I think, because, they might load manage him near the end. But if those carrots are dangling for him and he's got pots at a couple more soon here, there may be at least some runway to go after it before he's sat down. The scoring races are unbelievable in the NHL. The scoring race, the Art Ross race, unbelievable. I mean, we're kind of doing it in real time on Saturdays when they're all playing, which is great. Then there's the playoff race. But right now I'm thinking scoring race a little bit more interesting than the playoff races, because I don't know if there's anything really meaningful other than, you know, one seeds, I guess, in all the divisions. But right now, are you more interested, like me, in the scoring race than the playoff races?
Yes. We haven't seen it since, what was it, with Jamie Benn and John Tavares, right? Like, that was when Jamie Benn, you know, won the Art Ross Trophy with, like, 87 points. We actually had a year where 87 points won the Art Ross. Well, there it was. But that's the thing. Like, usually by now, someone has dusted the field. And usually that person's name is Connor McDavid. But Connor McDavid, as we all know, as did the Edmonton Oilers, you know, just had a miserable start to the season. But since the coaching change on November 12th, let me grab it here. Since November the 12th, Connor McDavid has scored 115 points in 59 games. Mm. For Chris Knobloch, here it is, 115 points in 59 games, going back to the coaching change. Can you imagine what number he'd be at right now? Like, it wouldn't even be a contest. Like, with all due respect to Nikita Kucherov and Ethan MacKinnon, that's cute and all, but, you know, if Connor McDavid would have had a Connor McDavid start, he would have been dusting the field, and we wouldn't be talking about, you know, Jamie Benn and John Tavares and the 87 point race, and that, as much of a turtle race as that may have been, it was at least a race. But right now it's fascinating. And, you know, Connor held the, You know, Connor held the belt this weekend for about a cozy 30 minutes before he surrendered it again. But I mean, it's another remarkable story. And, you know, I'll never forget something that Jay Woodcroft, the former head coach of the Oilers, said to me and Elliot when we interviewed him last season. And he said, we were talking about McDavid and all the things that he does. And, you know, do you start to take it for granted? And Jay said, listen, this is for everybody out there. Don't be numb to this. Like, understand, like, it's okay to be in awe about what Connor McDavid is doing. Don't be numb to it and just say, oh, it's just Connor McDavid, because we're really seeing something special here from one of the greatest players to ever play the game. Don't be numb. Like, allow yourself to be in awe of this, because it really is a thing that we should, like, have our mouths wide open about. I mean, every night, grab the game sheet every night. Connor McDavid, 1+3. Connor McDavid, 2+2. Like, every single game, this guy just continues to pile up the points. And I agree with Woodcroft. Don't be numb to it. Fall into it. This is an incredible thing that McDavid is doing again.
So does he have a trump card? Like, we were talking about 70 goals, Matthews. That's maybe an automatic card. Like, can you deny 70? But is 100 assists as powerful as that? It's more likely as powerful, though.
Yeah, it is. Are you talking about to get the Hart Trophy?
Yeah.
It's going to be tough given the season that Kucherov and Nathan MacKinnon have had. I mean, I think 100 assists is like just such a remarkable stats. Mm-hmm. The way that he's able to consistently find players in traffic and make the game easy for them. Like, I can recall, like, remember his first couple years, there was a line that he played on early, and I really like this line. It was Connor McDavid, Benoit Pouliot, and Nail Yakupov. Ooh. And I thought it was a really good line. You know, Pouliot would do everything along the boards. McDavid would do all the zone exits and all the zone entries with the speed. And then all that Yakupov had to do is just wait for McDavid to set him up, and all he had to do was shoot.
He'd just twirl the stick around. That's all he
had to
do.
Just what... Yeah, whenever the puck is on your stick, that's McDavid's indication. He's just giving you the puck. Just shoot it, because he's going to find you in the right space. Like, the thing that always impresses me about McDavid is how he's able, while he has the puck on his stick, not just to do wonderful things with it, but his sense of timing and allowing people to get open at the right times and almost positioning players by the way that he accommodates the puck into the zone. I don't think I'm explaining this very well, but he has this incredible sense of when to pass it and how to get players in position to receive the pass as well. Now, he does a great job knocking away sticks too. Like, he's brilliant. I don't think we talk about that as a skill enough in the NHL, knocking out sticks. But he does it, and Matthews does this as well. It forces defensemen to grab the stick with two hands, as you guys well know. Matthews does it better than most. Matthews and McDavid do it better than most. I think 100 assists is remarkable, just given how tough it is in today's NHL to find lanes, and especially when you're Connor McDavid. I mean, the minute that McDavid has the puck on his stick in the offensive zone, it's panic time. Uh-oh, he's got the puck on his stick. It's right away, it's like shut down lanes, shut down lanes, shut down lanes, and he still finds people. You know, we keep saying that, you know, player like Leon Draisaitl or Robert Thomas are like the best passers, playmakers in the NHL. And I kind of look at it like we used to always say, you know, Wayne Gretzky was never a great goal scorer. He's the best goal scorer of all time. Or we look at Wayne Gretzky and never consider him to be one of the best shooters, best goal scorers we've ever seen. Yet there it is. We talk about Draisaitl being this elite level passer. Connor McDavid is going to get 100 assists. Mm-hmm. It's another remarkable stat that we shouldn't be numb to. Does it get him the Hart Trophy, though? I don't know what the voters go for that. I think that they would look at McDavid's total points, same as Nathan MacKinnon, same as Nikita Kucherov. I don't know that the 100 assists necessarily puts him over the top.
For those counting at home, McDavid with 96 assists and just with 125
points. So 100 next time
points.
Out. Or by the end of the week, at the very least.
Yeah, definitely. A game or two. MacKinnon 127, Kucherov 126, McDavid 125. That's your daily update. Those might change real quick. We're talking to Jeff Merrick, of course, on the Jeff Merrick Show and 32 Thoughts, the podcast. One last one for you, Jeff. And you sparked a really great debate about the Most Improved Player Award, why it doesn't exist, and if it were to exist in the NHL, who would get it? I loved it. We are going to do our own version of this after we talk to you, but lay your case for who would get your first ever MIP.
And why the NHL should do it. Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, awards are marketing, right? I mean, let's just be honest about what the awards are. It's marketing the greatness of your game, celebrating the greatness of your game. But make no mistake about it, all those trophies are all, you know, marketing tools. And I don't necessarily, I do kind of go back and forth on whether there's too many, other they're not enough. Should they fragment again? Should there be two Norris trophies, etc.? You know, I just wonder, like, once upon a time, and we still kind of continue to do so, wonder about whether there should be a defensive defenseman of the year award, hello Jacob Slavin, and there should be an offensive defenseman of the year, hello Quinn McCarr, maybe Yossi Evan Bouchard, etc. And I just think that, you know, I don't know that we spend enough time talking about players that have improved either in season. Look, we started this conversation by talking about Elias Samsonov. Like, we've just seen improvement in season from this goaltender. But as far as like year over year, season over season, I like the idea of an award for that. And this is to distinguish as well. Like, there's most improved and then there's comeback. Like, I would look at Jonathan Drouin as having a great season with the Colorado Avalanche. I wouldn't say that's an improvement season. I would say that's a comeback season for him. Gustav Nyquist at the age 33 or 34 is having a great, you know, not a improved season, but a comeback season for the Nashville Predators. So generally, you're talking about younger players, not rookies, obviously, because we have no frame of reference for them, but players that have had one, maybe 2 years under their belt, maybe three, who knows, haven't been there yet. And then finally, it all clicks together. Two jump to mind for me. One is Quinton Byfield of the Los Angeles Kings. Ailish, remind everybody where he played his minor hockey.
The York Simcoe Express.
Very good. Well done. And so one is Quinton Byfield, the Los Angeles Kings, who plays on one of the best lines in the NHL, worked his way up, not even playing his natural position of center with Adrian Kempe and Andrei Kopitar. And the other, though, and this is where I might lean, although it depends which time of the day you ask me, is Seth Jarvis of the Carolina Hurricanes. Hey. Seth Jarvis playing up top with you know, the likes of Sebastian Aho, having a fantastic season. I may go that way with my vote if there was an award like this. Seth Jarvis has 62 points, Byfield has 53, and I know you're going to ask, who's your hipster pick for this one? And I would go with defenseman Thomas Harley of the Dallas Stars, who's now playing first pair with Miro Heiskanen. And you will get a lot of people saying it's got to be Yuri Slafkovsky, and I'll hear that one as well. That's an excellent case, specifically after what happened last year with them.
Well, we shouldn't have asked you, because we're going to unveil our ballots, and I think every name that we considered, although we were looking for confirmation bias with
I guess we're smart.
Elias Samsonov, yeah, I guess we were pretty smart, because Merritt's been talking and thinking about this all weekend.
Hey,
and we're on the same page, so that's great.
How about Dakota Joshua with the Vancouver Canucks, former Toronto Maple Leafs, fifth round draft pick,
and he was up for a different
for future considerations.
We're going to do a couple other awards that we stole from other sports, and Dakota Joshua was a name I thought about for that one as well. But we got to get to that, so we're going to let you go, Merrick. Merrick Mondays, always fun. Go ahead.
One thing real quick.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to Jeff Chychrun coming up. If you could squeeze in, I'm asking a favor.
Okay.
So Jacob, his son, played Little Caesars while the family lived in Florida. Every single weekend, Jacob Chychrun got on a plane to fly to Michigan to play youth hockey with Little Caesars. I'm curious what that was like as a parent.
Okay.
Maybe that's
air miles, baby.
The reason for all his success.
No, don't say it.
I won't
don't
bring it up. I won't do it. All
we're
right.
We're not going there.
Okay, Jeff. We're going to say goodbye to talk to another Jeff, but have a great one. Thanks, Merrick. Appreciate it.
Okay. See you guys.
I didn't want to go there.
I had to do it. Okay
quickly, because he did name the players that we are interested
Quinton Byfield.
I want to give some background quickly, though.
Yeah, quickly.
Because the most improved player does belong in the NBA. And what it basically functions as, acknowledges a player that goes from being like really good or pretty good to all-star level. Mm-hmm. So that's what I think it should function as, function like when looking at it with the NHL. At least that's like my first reflexive way to think about this. You got to be good to great. So good to great for you.
Yeah. So Quinton Byfield, and maybe there is like a little bit of a bias in a sense of a York Simcoe Express Newmarket kid, but yeah, 53 points in 71 games this year is a plus 19. He's 21 years old. Last year, 53 games, only 22 points. He's averaging a lot more ice time. I think that also to me means, you know, you're improving in terms of your role, in terms of your usage. His shooting percentage is way up. He's taking on more responsibility, and he's showing that favorably in how he's performing and how he's helping this team. And I don't have too much time to go through it, but I know there's a lot of good candidates, but I like what Quinton Byfield's done with LA Kings.
Yeah, we'll do comeback, clutch, and a six-man a little later on as well. I'll be quick. Seth Jarvis was my third on the ballot. Byfield number two, Noah Dobson my number one. The good to great is going from, hey, you didn't get any Norris votes, but you were a good defenseman in the NHL, to, hey, maybe you're in Vegas at the end of June, finishing second to Quinn Hughes. I think that is a very distinct possibility that Dobson goes from a good defenseman to one of the league's absolute best. For me, that would qualify as a most improved player.
Yeah, great idea by Jeff Merrick, as we mentioned. We're going to talk about this a little bit later at 7 o'clock. We propose some new NHL awards. We'll go through those. We'll take a quick break because we're going to talk to Jeff Chychrun. We'll ask him about Little Caesars and all that travel.
Maybe.
And of course, his son's crazy diet. That's all next on the Fan Pregame. Fan Pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. The Fan, ahead of Monday Night Hockey, the Panthers and the Leafs, 7 p.m. puck drop at the big game here. Obviously, these two kind of jockeying for spots atop of the Atlantic. Well, not atop, a top three at least. Still a lot to be learned about these two as they go head-to-head. Ilya Samsonov getting the start tonight, which might be something that you're learning in terms of a starting goaltender possibly getting a look against a playoff opponent. We're going to get into that a little bit later. But let's bring in maybe like enemy of these sorts, Jeff Chychrun coming in. Florida Panthers analyst for Valley Sports ahead of tonight's matchup. We appreciate you coming on. How's it going, Jeff?
Very good. Thank you. Thanks for having me today.
Of course.
Looking forward to the game myself.
Yeah, I bet this is a big one. The Florida Panthers have been really impressive this season. I guess we can even look back to last season. They're scratching their way into the playoffs. I think a lot of people doubted what they were made of, what they were able to produce, and they go all the way to the Cup Final. And I think this time around, we've learned a little bit more about this team not being as much of a surprise. Maybe they've really earned the praise that they're at. So you look at this last, I guess, 12 months of the Florida Panthers. What's been most impressive for you as this team continues to put themselves in the conversation as a Stanley Cup favorite?
Yeah, impressive just how they approach the game day to day. And, I think their identity, we talk about that an awful lot, I guess. But I think this team really knows who they are. They talk, you even heard Sam Reinhart today speaking about playing to their identity, playing to their, they play a very difficult style to play. It's that hard gap and always on the right side of the puck prior to any other offensive game. And it can really be strenuous. It can wear them down as well as their opponents. But I think the thing that when Paul Maurice first came in 2 years ago, I remember I was at the first day of training camp and he talked about doing a lot of things sort of 3 feet from the boards, which to me really just stressed being on that right side of the puck. And I just think the consistency that even their stars talk about and seem to play, from Barkov to Reinhart to Sam Bennett to Matthew Tkachuk, they all talk about that system on the defensive side of the puck. And I think they've just been really consistent in that department.
Okay, so what's going on recently with the Panthers? 4-5-1 their last 10, 7 wins, 7 losses in March. 17 teams had more points in the month of March compared to Florida. The Florida Panthers are still in a great position. Perhaps they know who they are so much that, hey, they can kind of load manage a little bit heading into the stretch run, but it hasn't been as pretty lately. So what have been the issues for Florida of late?
You're absolutely right. It hasn't been. And I think maybe every team has to stub their toe a little bit, or like I talked about earlier, playing that really difficult, hard grinding game that they do play. I think sometimes it takes its toll and it could be schedule. I think they have had a pretty tough schedule of late. A couple of guys have been in and out of the lineup. And I do think, like I said, it takes its toll. They've struggled a little bit on the offensive side of the puck recently, too, I think, which has certainly hurt them on the score sheet. I think teams just tend to go through this. And 2 years ago, they went into the playoffs. I think they're President's Trophy winners. They won their final 12 games in a row going into the first round. And really weren't very good in the playoffs. So I think this year, I think similar to last year, they know who they are. I'm not sure why, for whatever reason, it's been the past X number of games where they've sort of battled it, but probably better now. They still have 8-9 games to go in the season. Get it out of the way now. And I think they like where their game is. I think there were a few games in that stretch, maybe the Carolina game, the Tampa game, where they weren't really crazy about how they played. But I think they like their game against the Rangers. They love their game against Boston. And they had a tough one against the Islanders, which actually clinched their playoff spot, didn't win. But it's an interesting group and really fun to watch in all the aspects we talked about, sort of defending well, but not really taking away the offensive game. And for whatever reason, it hasn't been clicking great lately, but you listen to them talk. They're not upset with where their game is right now.
Yeah, the only thing that I could find is that scoring chances are pretty significantly down for them, at least in the month of March, but they're a top five team in scoring chances all year. Mm-hmm. So you named some of the teams that they've played. So good defensive teams, and maybe it's a bit of a product of that and that malaise kind of working hand in hand. I want to go back to last year. You beat the Boston Bruins, or the Panthers did, in the playoffs, and then the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, what did that change a group, right? Like if you accomplish something, and that's an accomplishment, beating the Bruins and Maple Leafs in succession, going into Scotiabank Arena in Toronto and kind of having a moment where, hey, you get to really, like, you just dunked on the local team in Toronto. You got to say what you wanted to say. You got to act the way you wanted to act. Like, it seemed like, hey, this was a real moment for that team, for that franchise, for those players. Did that change the group in any way? Like, I know they had some confidence, but maybe not full belief. But after that, I mean, everything must have been clicking. The belief must have been there. They must have been different after having so much success in last year's playoff.
I think it has to change you. I think it's just defining who you are, confirmation of everything you've talked about throughout the calendar year, going into those big moments against Boston, against Toronto, two of the best teams in hockey, and having success at the critical junctures, finding a way to beat Boston in game seven, and then having big games in Toronto itself, and the culmination of all your efforts, you know. And it wasn't just through Paul Maurice's first year. I mean, it was through the years that Bill Zito had taken over. Andrew Burnett had some good season, and Joel Quenneville prior to that. You know, sort of getting to this point. You know, I think I look back to, you know, they drafted Alexander Barkov 11 years ago, Aaron Ekblad 10 years ago, to get to this point, to be leaders on this hockey club. So when you finally have that playoff success, they had a couple of playoff runs where I think they sort of maybe not built their identity, but I think winning in the playoffs is learned behavior. So they had a couple of tough losses at the Tampa Lightning back-to-back years. One where they took Tampa to seven games, and Tampa actually won the cup that year. So I think those are really good building blocks that, you know, they've certainly paid their dues to get to where they are today. And I'm excited to see where the next eight games go, and then that first round, whoever it is against.
Not to look too far ahead, but Sam Reinhart, as you mentioned, has been a really bright spot of this team. He's got 86 points, 51 goals as of a couple days ago, and looking to add on to that. But this offseason, you know, it might be a lot of buzz around Sam Reinhart. Do you think he's the type of guy that is really, like, looking forward to sticking in Florida and keeping his career there? Or are we going to be having the prize of the offseason being auctioned away?
Well, that's above my pay grade, certainly. That'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. I know for a fact Sam loves playing here, mm-hmm. loves playing with this group of guys. He's had great success since coming here. And whether he's playing on the top line with Barkov or today, you'll sort of see the Panthers are sort of maybe getting into their playoff mode. He's with a couple of young guys, Anton Lundell and Atu Lusterainen, who sort of formed that Paul Maurice refers to as a real playoff line. I don't know where it's all going to play out. Again, you know, obviously there's a crunch. The teams only have about 82, 83 to play with. So where everybody fits in come the off season, that'll play itself out. But I think Sam's certainly put himself in the best position personally and as a great teammate here in Florida to set himself up quite nicely moving forward.
Like Sam Reinhart, it seems like everyone who's showed up in Florida recently has been the best version of themselves. What is the explanation for everyone who ends up there suddenly being better or as good as they've ever been before?
Yeah, you know, I'm in that room a bit and sort of looking around. There just seems to be a pretty harmonious group in there. They've obviously been very welcoming to just about anybody that's come in there. And I think everybody's sort of bought into whatever system. I mean, you have to give so much credit to Bill Zito, because it was even in the Joel Quenneville and then Andrew Burnett, the guys he was bringing in for, you know, Anthony Duclair's players like that came in and had really great seasons. The Stahl brothers, so many people have come in and just really performed that might have flown under the radar elsewhere and just fit in. There's obviously a team dynamic. I think a good team is obviously created through the peers in your room, the leadership group that they have in there, obviously welcoming, obviously great teachers and great motivators. And the players have come in and just adapted really well. I don't know what the tonic is, but it's certainly been fun for all of us here to watch and broadcast.
Maybe it's just like having sunshine and like vitamin D and margaritas and happiness.
Maybe the sunshine is probably part of the tonic, a different sort of tonic, I guess, for the margaritas. Does that apply to Vladimir Tarasenko? I mean, you look at the stats, and admittedly, I haven't watched every shift he's taken with the Panthers. Maybe slightly underwhelming in terms of numbers, but is he fitting in the same?
Yeah, I think he really has. I mean, like we talked about earlier, Paul Maurice, and I had the benefit of, you know, my son's in Ottawa, so seeing what Vladdy meant to the Ottawa Senators prior to, and just the way he conducted himself every day, and I see that in the room here today. And you heard Paul Maurice today talk, doesn't talk about Vladdy's offense, talked about his instincts and how well groomed so many of those Russian players are to play and be responsible defensively. And that's really how you hear everybody talk about being on the Florida Panthers, how systematically and defensively structured and strong they all are. And that's sort of job one here. And I've watched him since day one. I think he had two goals. It was either the first or second game playing with Barkov and Reinhardt. But you can see the little things he does away from pucks, defensively going back deep in the defensive zone to be an outlet and support the defensemen as they're trying to gain possession, and such a strong skater, such a strong man. Then when he does get that puck, I mean, his shot is lethal. 10, 12 feet out, he can beat just about anybody. But I've just really been impressed with his hockey sense, his demeanor, and his defensive structure.
We're talking to Jeff Chychrun. You've been a part of a cup-winning team. So what was your recipe, right? Like, you look at each team as their dynamic. They've got their characteristics. But what was it that made the 92 Penguins such dynamic team?
Yeah, they were good. Well, first of all, we had Tom Brasso, who's one of the best U.S.-born goaltenders in history. I think down the middle of the ice, I mean, how many Hall of Famers did we have? Obviously, Mario, Ron Francis, mm-hmm. Yager. Brian Trottier was, I think Trotz was 37 years old, and I think in game four in Chicago, he took every defensive zone draw. Sort of really understated with players like Joe Mullen. I think our best players were just so good, and everybody, again, on that roster bought in. Not unlike this group I see here in Florida, and I'm sure not unlike so many of those great players in Toronto do today for team success. If you look what John Tavares has done over the years in Toronto, it's nothing short of great and impressive. And obviously, you know, what Austin Matthews and Nylander are doing on the score sheet, I'm sure it's going to be great when Mitchell gets back and just help lead that roster. But it truly is a team environment to win. Your great players have to play and be healthy at that time. But it's such a team structure that wins.
Yeah, you played with Jaromír Jágr, as you mentioned, and he's been quite the face over the last couple of weeks, at least with the bobbleheads getting stolen and getting his moment there. I'm sure you've got a good story, a good memory, or just a thought on playing with somebody that is such a legend, and his legend continues to be written with whatever's happening now and how he continues to play. And the bobbleheads were hilarious as well.
Yeah, right. Looks like he's having a great time with it too. He was just a kid. He was a 19-year-old kid, I think, in 92. But just such a strong, strong skater and strong body. Get up and down the ice, could play with anybody. I think he played mostly with Ronnie Francis at the time. Ronnie could dish the puck. I mean, better than, as good as anybody in the game at the time. And Yags, he just, you know, we had a pretty funny dressing room there. You know, Kevin Stevens, big, big boisterous voice in there and really, really sort of loud North American presence. And Yags was not afraid to come in and say, Europeans are the best hockey players out there. So it kind of, you know, a good little rivalry in that locker room made for some fun times, no doubt.
Is this where maybe your son learned the legends of protein, like raw liver and beef heart? Or where did that come from? Because we have to ask you, obviously, we got you now on the line. But some of the stuff that we hear that he eats, I don't know if we should be asking you or if you want to, like, admit to feeding him this diet, but it's pretty crazy.
Well, I think legend kind of grows And I think some people sort of play on a little bit. But honestly, every time I'm with him, I'd say 98% of anything he eats is pretty well cooked. does enjoy the protein side of things. But listen, I think diets, exercise, everything, and as pro athletes, we evolve. You know, Jacob's had to battle a few injuries throughout his career, so he's evolved every year. And I think some of the things he's tried have been a little revolutionary, maybe. But I think he's done a really good job. And sort of statistically this year, he, you know, stayed at played in every game. So I think what he's doing is working. But no, I don't touch anything raw. My wife doesn't either. And my daughter's a vegetarian. So how do you like that? We're quite a clash of
all over the map.
So mostly grilled meats when meat is on the menu. So that's not slowing them down. But we also just talked to Jeff Merrick. He wanted us to ask you about all the air miles being spent going from Florida to play for Little Caesars when you were young. Must not have been a grind for him, but maybe a grind for you. All those air miles back then.
Such a grind. I think we finally cashed in some recently, but. Yeah, and then all those years in Arizona. No, but I'll tell you what, really the time of my life, the number of times we sat at, flying back from Detroit in the airport on the plane at 8:30 to 11 o'clock on a Sunday night, and he's sitting there doing his homework behind me. Those are like great life memories. And I don't know, I think I heard the legend of Carey Price where his father actually bought an airplane there in northern BC to fly to Vancouver every weekend. So, flying a plane wasn't in my budget, but I wish I could go back to being the taxi driver minor hockey again. Awesome. Just the greatest memories. As everybody in Canada, United States can attest, when we're with our kids, there's nothing better.
Yeah, well, we wish you and, of course, your son the best of luck with the rest of the season and moving forward. And I would love having you on and hope we get to chat down the road. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me. Have a great day. I'm looking forward to tonight.
Yeah, us as well. Thanks so much. Jeff Chychrun, Florida Panthers analyst with Bally Sports there. Of course, a 92 Stanley Cup champ, and that team that he played on, I mean, it's iconic. It's Lemieux, Jagr. We got Rick Tocchet, who's Canucks head coach, Francis Kraken GM, Coffey Oilers assistant coach, a really amazing roster of guys that, you know, are in their own Hockey Hall of Fames, but also doing things in the sport still. So a team of leaders, a team of accomplished hockey minds. I think when you look back, maybe that's the type of people that make a Stanley Cup winning team. It's hard to know.
Hall of Famers, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, even the other guys that are back in, you know, I'm coaching, I'm a GM, yeah, yeah. I'm an assistant coach, I'm back in the game in a role that is impacting the future. Well, it's just interesting when you look at like who's on that team, how many of them are still involved.
Yeah, probably not a salary cap involved either.
No, but
you know, I thought he made a great point there, Brian Trottier, going out there and winning every defensive zone draw at 37 years old after winning Stanley Cups in his prime, you know, a decade earlier, right? Like sometimes that's what it requires. And I guess like the Maple Leafs, we're going to talk about the Maple Leafs. You know, they kind of tried that. You know, Joe Thornton came in, Patrick Marleau came in, Mark Giordano's still on the team. You know, that's kind of been a tack that they've taken, but maybe it wasn't the thing that completely put them over the top. We'll say, though, he's looking forward to the game. I think a lot of people are looking forward to this game. I feel like the Florida Panthers are looking forward to this game. Like, it feels like Toronto gets something out of that group. Like, I'm never going to forget, I don't think. Nick Cousins, Matthew Tkachuk, sitting up there, all smiles, eating pizza, kind of enjoying their moment while they had it. Like, I really do think that that was a turning point for a lot of those players where they could just be like, hey, we kind of slayed maybe not, like, the biggest, baddest dragon in the world, but a dragon nonetheless, and something that really put them in the center of everyone's consciousness. And I think you crave that. I think you want that. I think they probably want that again. This Florida Panthers team is legit, has played really, really well, not so much as late, but you think Toronto gets a reaction out of pretty much everyone across the league, and I think Florida would be right at the top of that list.
I was reminded earlier when I was looking at the last couple times these guys played, the Sam Bennett-Max Domi fight and the balding gesture,
yep.
Which, you know, I think Max Domi is still trying to find his own back in November when he became a Maple Leaf for the first time, and there's all this excitement around what he was going to be, and look at how much differently we view Max Domi's importance on this team and how much he feels like he's a Maple Leaf. I feel like that kind of was the start of learning a little bit more about Max Domi and his personality and what he brings, and they might go head-to-head tonight, but it looks like if we're looking at the lineup that Ryan Reeves is in the lineup tonight. We've got Bertuzzi, Matthews, Domi on that top line, McMahon, Tavares, Nylander, Nyes, Holmberg, Robertson, Dewar, Camp, and Reeves, Brody, Labushkin, McCabe, Benoit, Giordano, Timmins. those are your line rushes right now as the Leafs take the ice for warm-up, which you can catch on Sportsnet in about 10 minutes as well.
Yeah, perfect. Still waiting on Mitch Marner, of course. Didn't want to admit that the injury was what everyone expects it to be. That was a little strange over the weekend, but Marner at least...
We didn't get the chance to talk about that.
Did meet the media, which would make you think that, you know, his return, maybe not imminent, but yeah, the Leafs are growing towards being back at full strength.
All right, let's take a look at some best bets for tonight. And after that, we'll take a quick break. We'll go on to Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We'll talk about some of our new NHL awards that we're going to propose. Maybe Gare Bear is listening. And Julia Kreutz will join us of MLB.com to talk about the Blue Jays, who are up against the Houston Astros tonight. We'll give you the lineup for that in a minute. But my best bet is a bit of a futures bet, and that's not usually me. That's Justin Cuthbert's thing. But I saw the way that Matthews celebrated on the road for 60, and I'm liking this. It is plus 750, not minus 750. Matthews to get 70-plus goals. It is a big payday if he can get to that number. I think he's got, 9 games left to do it? He takes a couple of multi-goal games, and maybe he gets close enough that they let him play out the season. But, you know, Ryan Reeves said it the other day. He could get 80. I think the team is really going to want him to get, there it is, to get 70 goals. It would be pretty awesome to see it. So you can play a little bit of a 10-game future.
Yeah, Merrick scared me just
Merrick
a little bit there
me,
with
whatever,
the load management. But I do think, like, these hat tricks have come fast and furious for Matthews all year. And the goals can come in bunches for him. And if all of a sudden he scores 5 in 3 games,
Yeah. Like,
I think the goalposts change and you start, really,
one to cheer
you start
for too.
Really hunting down the 70 at that point. So I do think it's going to be decided pretty early rather than on the last days where he might be sitting. I got a couple. There's a lot that I like today, actually. LSU and Iowa meeting in the Women's March Madness NCAA tournament. A rematch of last year's final. And, of course, mm-hmm. You remember Angel Reese pointing to the ring finger.
There's so much excitement.
There was so much drama in that game. It was unbelievable. And that they're meeting again is awesome. Like, just so good that they get the chance to mm-hmm. rematch on the NCAA tournament stage. Sucks that it's coming a little earlier than the final or even the semifinal. But it's going to be awesome nonetheless. I just think that history repeats itself, though. I like LSU here.
Nah.
I think the teams have not changed.
I'm all over
Iowa, buddy.
In fact,
LSU might be better. Caitlin Clark, of course, is like, you know, peak of her powers, and they are better, I'm sure, as well. But I think if it's the same, mainly, I'm taking the dog. I'm taking LSU. I think Vegas wants Iowa to win, or the public wants Iowa to win, and that's why LSU are dogs. So I like LSU. Bowden Francis tonight.
Bowden
we'll get to the
Francis.
Jays lineup in a second. But Bowden Francis is the fifth starter, earned on merit, not given to him just because. I like Bowden Francis to shut down the Astros early. Jays in the first 5 line, plus 115. And I talked about it before the tournament. I don't know if it was on the air or if it was off the air. But Donovan Klingon for UConn is by and far away their best player. The guy for UConn who is minus money to win the NCAA tournament on the men's side. He's still plus 225 to win most outstanding player over our guy, Zach Edey. I think if UConn wins, they're going to have a UConn player win the tournament MVP. And I think it's easy. Klingon, plus 225 still. I think that's a great bet.
Okay, let's give you that Blue Jays starting tonight. They're starting a series against the Astros. They'll have that up after us on Sportsnet 590, The Fan at 8 o'clock. And, of course, on Sportsnet 1, you can watch it too. So our starters, we got Springer, Guerrero, Turner, Varsho, Kirk, Ernie Clement, Kevin Kiermaier, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, Kevin Biggio, and starting Bowden Francis. We will talk to our girl Julia Kreutz at 7:05 if you're going to stay on Sports at 590 The Fan with us. But they split the opening series there with the Rays. There was like two different iterations of Blue Jays baseball, right? It was this is the issues that plague the Blue Jays. They can't hit. They're having defensive errors. And then there was amazing offensive eruption. It was so exciting to watch. So you kind of got the best and the worst of Blue Jays baseball in a 4-game series at the Trop, which can be the house of horrors. But the amount that I was able to catch, I saw some good stuff.
Yeah, I will say game 4. I mean, like, if it went the other way, and it went beautifully, obviously. You know, they broke out offensively. Kevin Gausman, you kind of avoid disaster there because Kevin Gausmaning early in the season, which is definitely of utmost importance. But like dropping 3 or 4 at the Trop to start the season, embarking on Houston. In a tough start for the Blue Jays, like that would have been a tough loss, a tough weekend to stomach. And then you go 2-2 and you're like, oh, we split at the Trop. We're feeling great about everything. And now we get to go to Houston. So I think a lot of the feeling today hinged on that fourth game. And it was good on the Blue Jays for going out and getting it done.
All right, we're going to have another half hour here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. After us will be our Blue Jays pregame, and then, of course, they'll have first pitch around 8 o'clock there in Houston. We have Monday Night Hockey starting in about 5 minutes on Sportsnet. That's Leafs and Panthers on Sportsnet 1. You can also catch Blue Jays and Astros. And we're going to take a break. We're going to talk a little bit about our newest NHL awards. We'll talk to Julia Kreutz. I'll tell you about the small town of Wolseley, Saskatchewan, that I was in this weekend for Craft Hockeyville. And we'll get through everything and more.
And you heard it from Jeff for Jacob, almost exclusively grilled meat.
Grilled meat. We like grilled meat. A quick break. We'll back on the Fan Pregame.